Well, there you go. Hey, I got to get to my next guest. James Bovard's coming on. Hey, hold on. Wait. Donna's got him there. Just a second. Push the button. Hey, it's L. Neil Smith. James, say hello.
Hey, Neil. How are you?
I'm very well. How about yourself?
Doing fine. Always good to hear your voice on the radio.
Well,
radio,
thank you, sir.
Podcast, whatever.
Yeah, I got to get with James, L. Neil. Hey, thanks. It's good talking to you. Get caught up. And, yeah, tell your daughter I'm all over it. Let's do it.
All right, I will.
All right, but we need to do it soon before the election, okay?
Okay.
All right, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, L. Neil Smith and James Bovard. This is going to be the day. Today.
It's a moderate day.
What kind of microphone are you using?
I'm using the microphone on the Camcom podcast.
Okay, let me turn it up. There.
Maybe I can adjust it here, but but when I open up the Camcom software, it blocks the Skype.
No, it's good. That's good. It's okay. I just needed to get a level. You yakking a little bit. Okay. I mean, we got your TSA thing and give you a couple minutes there to slap them around a little bit, but I don't care, okay? Make sure you get that in, but that's, I mean, seriously, they're bad. The 35th anniversary of the biggest pre-9/11 U.S. anti-terrorism debacle. What the heck was that about?
That's the Beirut bombing. That's kind of obscure. The note from Donna mentioned you might want to talk about the Me Too stuff. You and I could have some fun with Christine Ford, my favorite helium lady. What the hell? You know, we could talk a bit about the bombs.
All right, here we come. We're coming in. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, unafeared here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Utiful Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, James Bovard, jimbovard.com. You go there and you see all his goodies. You see him all over the place. He's on, like, you know, everything. Here, let me list up. He's also a bunch of languages, Spanish, Arabic, Japanese, Korean. I mean, he gets translated and everything. And he's a member of the USA Today Board of Contributors. So you see him a lot in USA Today. A lot of the publishing that we have are articles of him. He allows us to publish his articles, but a lot of those come from USA Today, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Playboy, Washington Post. I mean, it goes on and on and on. He frequently does the American Conservative and The Hill. So this is a political reporter that lives in D.C. And you go, no, I don't. I'm outside the diagonal. Can you see the Washington Monument from your rooftop? Can you? Huh?
No. Look, Ernie, this is a real simple thing. I don't stay in fancy hotels like you and Donna. So
yeah.
You and Donna have the top floor, the penthouse suite, the honeymoon suite there at the Hilton. You know, I'm just a country boy who lives down the road in a low-level house. And so I can't see the Washington Monument. Crap, I'm not even able to see Rockville Pike.
Okay. I ask a question. Is there a train station metro thing near you?
Twinbrook, yeah.
And if you get on it, does it take you to D.C.?
Well,
and how long does that ride?
It depends on whether it catches fire that day. They have a lot of fires on the metro. They have a lot of shutdowns, and it's also turned into one of the boon. biggest boondoggles around, because what they do now routinely is shut it down on weekends to have extra track work. And so you go there and you see all these grossly obese Metro employees, and they aren't even leaning on shovels. So they're just standing there, you know, with their cell phones, checking the cat videos on Facebook. I don't know what they're doing. But, you know, they're getting double or triple time probably on weekends. And the system is imploding. They've lost a huge number of their riders. And what they're trying to do is blame Uber and Lyft. That's a bunch of crap. But, you know, that's a different story.
Yeah, the solution is Uber and Lyft. You know, that's one thing I remember when I go into Washington. It was weird how the taxis worked. You know, you get a taxi, and then they could drop you off, but they couldn't pick you up from that area. They could only pick you up in certain places or take you certain places. I'm like, what the hell kind of taxi service is this? Screw it, give me an Uber. So, you know, I was amazed at how controlled it was, and they're wondering why they got problems. Well, the point that I'm making is that you're close enough in the aura of Washington, D.C., that you cover a lot of Washington. You know, this is what you do. You know, there is a bunch of stories and people, and you're kind of around and getting the feels of what's going on, and that's what you write about. So, this Kavanaugh hearing thing had to, because a lot of these articles I'm looking at, you know, the FBI Comey stuff. The FBI, and they did this and that. You got some contacts in law enforcement. You have the New York Times, what they promoting and not, and you're right there, and you talk to the guys and the war stuff and the rights losing stuff and your brawl with the TSA of, you know, the buttheads, and, you know, so everything. But I tell you, this Kavanaugh thing, you know, I know you were paying attention to that. What do you, the Me Too movement, you know, how's that manifesting in this election cycle? You know, what's going on? Give me what's coming we can expect.
Well, you know, I was really hoping that the Kavanaugh hearing would help restore people's faith in government, but it doesn't seem to have done that. It was fascinating to see the media hysteria around that and to see the stampedes, first this way, first that way. The biggest absurdity was when the third accuser, Julie Swetnick, came up and claimed that she had been to 10 gang rape parties, and she had seen Kavanaugh there drugging the punch to make it easier to gang rape these teenage girls. And then she did a TV interview, I guess it was with NBC, and she says, well, I didn't see him, you know, putting drugs in the punch, but he was standing close to the punch bowl. And this is like, oh, this is a great standard of evidence. It was fun to watch that allegation go up like a mushroom cloud. But she didn't do that TV interview until after Senator Feinstein and others at the hearing had mentioned her as a credible accuser. And here's a woman who's got a rap sheet of bogus lawsuits and claims. It's just like, you know, why would they bring her onto that? So, I mean, I was not a fan of Kavanaugh. I wrote about how he was involved in some of the terrible things the Bush White House did early, the George W. Bush White House did early on. He was buddies with John Yoo, the torture mastermind, the guy that wrote the memos.
Yeah.
Kavanaugh's had at least one very bad decision on warrantless surveillance, illegal surveillance, which he had no trouble
with. All about executive power of we get to in America. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff that didn't get talked about. In fact, I'm sorry.
Yes, I mean, but, you know, flip side is there were some people say, well, there's not a dime worth of difference between the appointees that Trump would make versus what Hillary Clinton would have made. There's a lot of things to vigorously criticize Kavanaugh, but he's very good on guns, and he's probably going to be very good on property rights, and I think he'll be someone who pays attention and raises doubts about what federal agencies do. That said, I did not support him. But it was fascinating to see the standards of evidence that was brought up in with the primary accuser, Christine Ford. Okay, you know, as a journalist, I have people come to me and with stories of government abuses. I mean, hey, the government did this to me, and sometimes I write about it. But so if someone contacts me and says that they were assaulted by four federal agents in 1985, and I start writing about it, and then I talk to them a week later, and they say, well, actually, it was two federal agents in 1982. End of story. I mean, if someone changes the fundamental details of their accusation, it's like, hey, I don't have time for this shit. Christine Ford changed the details of her charges so many times. There were things that Kavanaugh said in that big showdown hearing that made me shake my head in doubt. But Christine Ford was changing her story so many times. It's certainly possible that Kavanaugh did some very nasty things or may have mistreated people in the past. But I was surprised that, you know, Christine Ford got instant sainthood.
Yeah, this is, you're looking at, you know, all boys school, must be tough to keep your cool. So I'm just like, you know, a football star, young teenager out at parties. I'm going.
Star. He was in the team. He wasn't a star, was he?
Oh, I don't know.
I think he was a quarterback. And this is people don't understand. I mean, people were saying, yeah, he was on the football team and he was a cornerback. See, you know, he'd have a whole different mindset if he'd been a linebacker. See, because you got to have a linebacker out there just to shut everything down. Cornerback, you're just out there chasing some guy. Linebackers.
Oh, it was cornerback. I thought he was quarterback. Oh, okay.
No. He was, I forgot what he was on the offense, but it's something else, you know. So he's, you know, they're going through his calendar, and they're always talking about, okay, he's doing weightlifting then. He's doing weightlifting then. How much could the dude bench press? We didn't find out.
You know, see, my thing is, teenage boy in the 80s when we're watching, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, you know, whatever, the mindset, he's, you know, copping the feel over the, I mean, I'm going, yeah, I'm never going to be Supreme Court Justice. So I'm like, you know, this stuff is going to be, I where was the meat? And we'll talk about it more.
Good.
From the sixth letter of Captain Mark. A pirate's life is characterized by voluntary interactions. Unfortunately, the crown presses everyone into involuntary servitude. Landlubbers believe slavery was abolished years ago, but the crown still claims to own us when it crimps us into service against our will. Given sufficient ambition, it would gladly draft thousands of hapless victims to kill or be killed. It's simply slavery by another name. Landlubbers are routinely commanded to serve the so-called justice system in jury duty. But before you swell with civic pride, consider that how you feel is irrelevant to the crown. You will appear as ordered or face punitive measures. The crown insists that you participate in your own oppression. A jury summons provides pirates with a unique opportunity to obstruct injustices. A juror can vote not guilty, even if it's proven the law was violated. A juror can acquit for any reason at all, and not even a judge can reverse that verdict. Receiving a jury summons is basically winning the sedition lottery. But if you reveal that you know this during jury selection, you'll probably be dismissed. If the crown foolishly crimps a pirate into jury duty, it behooves the pirate to conceal their intention to nullify unjust laws. If a master takes 100% of your labor, it's called slavery. But if they only take 50%, they call it taxation. A difference of degree, not of kind. Whether the crown claims a fortune or a cent is irrelevant. Most of all, a slave owner desires contented slaves, meaning thoughtless ones that accept their bondage. These house slaves see no contradiction in being drafted in a war to end slavery or summoned to a jury to prosecute tax evasion. An ideal slave knows no higher call than the master's will. The crown's highest ambition is that its slaves revere the authority that subjugates them. But the crown does not own me. I will not surrender my time and treasure to the crown's ambitions. Join the conversation at piratewithoutborders.com.
Yeah, pirates, man. We got a book on Amazon, The Letters of Mark, and it's like 48 pages of coolness, but we have a bunch ordered. I'm going to send you one. Donna, send him an email. Make sure we get his mailing address if you don't have it already, so we can send that to him. But I want you to have it. You dig it the most. It's fun. Oh, and you go to piratewithoutborders.com, do the virtual tour. You get to see a computer-generated animation of the pirate ship.
All right. Well, hey, you know, it gives me a reason to live.
I think so. You go see it. Well, the thing, I don't want to spend a whole bunch more time on this Kavanaugh thing, but what I did want to talk about was the impact it had on the Me Too thing. I did a 3.5-hour podcast.
No interruption.
I heard most of it. Yeah.
Oh, with Angela?
Yes.
You know, and I'm just like, all right, because I talked to her. And I said, you know, we need to do this. And then all of a sudden, one morning, she calls me like 5 in the morning before the show. Today. Today's the day. Damn it. Let's do it today. That's how that came about.
Wow.
So I had the show for 3 hours. Then I had a 2.5-hour podcast with Judge Buttrick. You know, we were yakking it up. And then, because the night before, we were at the dinner, and he had a bunch of Kyrsten Sinema stories to go along with, you know, mine and so on. Then you had run for Senate here. Then Angela's like, you know, 2 o'clock, and then we went long with that. And I'm going, all right, you know, I mean, it just until she ran out of stuff to say, you know, let's do it. But this whole movement.
It was nice for you to do that. It was funny to listen to her, to your reaction when she was explaining things like cisgender.
Yeah, I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? You know?
So, yeah.
Well, this Me Too thing, it was, I can see. We're coming back. Let's talk about this. This is something we need to get out.
Streamed around the clock, on the air, and online, this is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, chair dancing. You know, really good at chair dancing. That's Derek J. Freeman, man. He's really good at that. But you know, I can do it a little bit. Anyway, so what we're gonna do is the Me Too movement, as it's, you know, started to getting a lot of notoriety and things. And James Bovard, listen to some of my interview I did with Angela Keaton from antiwar.com. She's been on the LNC, Libertarian National Committee. I've known her for a long time. We've been good friends. But she is definitely feminist. You know, it's kind of men, you know, women. To the point, I don't know if you caught the part towards the end, she was telling me, you know, she's a paid dominatrix now, and she'll whip your ass, man. Get the men on the table. We're going to take care of business. You know, and I'm going, hey, man, I not when you're mad. So it's...
It was a fascinating interview. Ernie, it's great that you had Angela on for several hours to... you know, to talk and, you know, to say how she felt and explain her perspective. It's interesting about her being a dominatrix. I saw her last time I saw her. Well, no, I've seen her since then, but I ran into her with another guy who writes about foreign policy at Cap City Brewery a few years ago in D.C. And she'd been writing a lot about how she was doing training, and she's posting photos on online of her exercise routine. So I said, hey, Angela, let's arm wrestle. And so she and I arm wrestled, but I was just kind of curious to see, just to see how strong she was. But it wasn't a fair contest because she was drinking the bottomless mimosa.
Well, I really like Angela, but she's has a different perspective. I mean, her life and her parents were libertarian, and she, you know, how do you rebel against libertarian parents, you know? So it was, it's interesting, her perspective. She's very serious about freedom, and she likes the idea that she gets to have the same freedom and options of choices that a man would. If a man did the same kinds of things, you know, they wouldn't be even the second thought. But a woman doing it, all of a sudden, and that's the point that she was making. You know, she gets to do whatever the hell she wants, the way she wants, and have her own standard. But this Me Too thing, it is, to me, I needed to understand it. And I don't know if you heard the part where I started coming to realization over the last couple of months, is that, and it's kind of evolution, but it really solidified, that women are in this PTSD mode because it's like men out salmon fishing. And you got grizzly bears everywhere. You better have your 50 cal on you or some means to defend yourself. And even when we did the letter of reprisal on Pirates Without Borders, we had from the female perspective self-defense. And the reason was that, you know, they're always physically less able to repel an aggressor. And it's a physical thing. What if you had the ability, a ring, a bracelet, fingernails, you got Marvel shield powers of you're not allowed to hurt me? would that change society that they didn't, you know, they weren't physically threatened all the time by bears around them all the time. And that was the point that I was trying to get to, is would that change the way they viewed men and the Me Too movement? And it was amazing to me how little they even thought of it, or that they even wanted it. You know, I'm going, God, man, I want my wife, my daughters, my granddaughters to be able to repel any aggression. But, you know, would that take away an issue? You know, so do they need the victimhood to do it, or that's the way they think? I'm a victim, as opposed to, you know, I'm not. You know, I got a whatever super wand of rail gun of, you know, eyeball rays of something, you know. My Google Glass will fry you. But I'm looking at the Me Too movement and how it plays out there in D.C., in elections, in the atmosphere. Is it necessary? Is it required? Are you glad? Do you think it's gone off the rails? Give me your view on this thing.
Well, you know, a couple different things. As far as the physical aggression, there was a wonderful line from probably about a century and a half ago, and that was that God made man, but Mr. Colt made him equal.
Yep.
And, you know, there's concealed carries become far more common in this nation, and there are a whole lot more women packing heat now than there used to be. It's interesting. There is a number of groups I do hikes with. In this area, and some of the hikes are in Maryland, some of the hikes are in Virginia, some are in D.C. But if I'm hiking in Virginia, then it's, you know, there's a number of folks who I hike with who I know pack heat, and that's fine with me. And
yeah, one less thing you got to bring.
I say what?
One less thing you got to bring.
Indeed. Hey, you know, if you're some rude bicyclist, No, I'm joking about the bicyclists. Here's an aside. I mean, I was leading a hike last weekend on the CNO towpath, CNO Canal towpath,